and I heard audibly, just audibly, spiritual shit.
Love.
You were like,
that's such
done.
A good name.
Sign me up.
Whatever spirit guide that was used to be in marketing or something. Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontenot.
And I'm Melissa Brushka.
And today we have a special guest, spiritual advisor, Alia Lovely. Dean, are you ready to talk to her?
Super duper excited.
Hey, Signal listeners, before we get into this week's episode, I have something personal to share. That I wanted to take a minute and just talk to you about. For those of you that have been listening to our podcast, you know that I have written a book, and I am so excited to share that this book is finally available for pre-sale on Amazon and Target.com and several other places. My book is called Higher Self, Reclaiming the Power of Your Intuition. And it is all of my coaching methodology, but also very much a personal memoir about my own life and how I realized that I had the intuitive gifts that I had and all of the highs and lows that I've navigated that have really allowed me to create the method that's been so life-changing for so many people. And this has been truly a labor of love for the past 2 years, and the book is finally available for pre-order. If you can take just a minute and visit any of the links that we are going to put in the show notes to put in your pre-order, it helps this book so much when it finally comes out in March. It makes the publishers feel so good about how much people want to hear this message, which allows us to print even more copies and distributors to be even more excited to carry the book. So truly, your pre-orders make all the difference. Again, those links will be in the show notes. And thank you so much for your support. On with the show.
Hey, y'all.
Hi. Alia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are so excited to have you on.
I couldn't stop saying it, how excited I was.
I was on your show years ago, three or four years ago, and I've been following you and listening to your podcast. And Bean and I have been saying forever, like, you know, we need more people to come on and share more about their gifts and the way that they're utilizing their gifts to just help humanity at this time. And like, you could not have come at a better time. So thank you for talking to us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I'm excited.
Alia, we do this little thing before we get into the meat of the episode where we like to catch each other up by playing a little game of cringe or delight. We just share something embarrassing or delightful that's happened to us in the week. And we'd love for you to do that with us. But we won't make you go first. How about you go last but not least?
You think about it.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Bean, do you want to start today?
Yeah, mine's a little heavy and serious, but not serious, but also. So I'm going to do partial cringe, partial delight.
Okay, great.
My grandmother, who I speak about, we were just talking about grandmothers right before this came on. I've spoken about her at length on this podcast, was unexpectedly hospitalized last week and very, very sick. And for a little bit there, it looked like she wasn't going to make it. And she is like this matriarch of love of our family. I have spoken about her so much. And she's 93, and I sort of always knew, of course, it would come as she's older. But like when that moment came and that feeling with all of us, I was taken aback by how devastated we all were. Like what a loss this will be. But in true Bubby fashion, she turned a corner. The doctors are like, she's amazing. How is she like this? She turned a corner and she's still in the hospital and they're still working on stuff. But she like is coming back. I was with her for an hour and a half yesterday. She's like telling me stories about her grandmother, really getting back to herself, I feel like. So it's both was horrible, but also eye-opening. Like, wow, life is so fleeting.
Bubby is miraculous. She was not going to go out like that.
Nope. Her light is still going to shine for a little bit longer. I know it.
That sounds like my grandma.
Really?
Yeah.
We're actually going down to see her today because she turned a corner. And so very similar story. She's 93, same thing.
What?
So we're going, our whole like cousins and everybody's going down there to see her to hopefully she'll pull out.
Where's down there?
Yeah.
Wichita. So she lives here. She lives down the street from me usually.
And Alia lives in Missouri.
Kansas City. Yeah.
Kansas City. Yes.
Yeah. She lives down the street from me, but she's been in hospice and there's been some stuff going on. So my uncle took her down there to take better care of her. And hopefully it's not the last time we'll see her, but it's kind of similar story.
Yeah. It's so nice that you can be around each other during that moment.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that the family comes together and that we all, I feel like we all shared great stories about her and just what an impact she had on our life. And it was like a beautiful moment for us all being together.
Yeah.
But
and Bubby's just focused on looking good, looking fine.
She's very concerned about there, still looking her, sexy.
Yeah, yeah. Which I love.
Love.
That's what's keeping her so young.
Totally.
Well, Bean, I'm very happy to hear that she's doing well.
Me yeah. too. Thank you. It's been a week.
Okay. Well, I'll go next.
Okay.
I was telling Bean before we started recording, like, I'm so sick of our delights being our kids because I just think that's so boring, but
so
I'm about
pleasant.
To do it, but I have a cringe too. I have both. TJ was out of town this week and that just puts a lot of pressure on the system, like of our lives, because then it comes down to me driving them to school, coming back, working, doing my sessions, doing the podcast, going back, picking them up. So it's been intense, but I sat them down and I was like, look, we're going to go back to like days when mommy was a single mom and I need you guys to like come show up. And I have been so amazed at how they've shown up. Like Keon doing dishes, Raina's taking out the trash. They are really, I walked out, Raina refuses to feed the cats because it's wet food and she wants to gag every time. I walked out, Squirrel was like feeding the cats their wet food. She was, aww, they have really stepped up their game. I know. And it was really, it's really sweet because it is reminding me of so many years of it being just me and them. I think that there's a way that it like brings us together. Like that is the fabric of our relationship is right. me being a single mom. So they know how to jump into gear for me. And my cringe is that this morning my Bean texted me, how you live in Biggie Smalls.
Oh.
And I
what's the answer? Alia, what's the answer to that question? How you live in Biggie Smalls? What's the answer?
I'm chilling.
Right?
No.
I don't know. Alia, I'm not going to guess your age, but I don't know if you're old enough.
Oh, yeah. She looks
young. Oh, wait a minute.
Are you?
Wait a minute.
Okay. Yeah, well, then you should be
40 years old.
How old?
But I wasn't 40.
You look fresh-faced, girl.
Oh, thank you. But my parents, because we were raised super Christian, we weren't allowed to listen to it.
Okay, so you won't all be right. as embarrassed, as cringed out as all I right. am. But I said, she said, how you live in Biggie Smalls? And I said, live in large, homie. And what I was supposed to say is, in mansions and Benzes.
Oh, yeah.
And I
okay,
totally,
there it is.
I was so embarrassed for myself. I feel like Biggie Smalls rolled over in his grave because like, come on, you're supposed to be a fan.
You were single momming and you didn't have the bandwidth at the moment.
Thank you.
I'll give it. I forgive you.
So that was my cringe. All right. Your turn.
Okay. My cringe. I have insane sensory OCD. So I bought these lamps or whatever for our house and it put me in this spiral of like, we need a new dining table and it has to
Makes
be
sense.
This dining table. Yeah. And I have this hyper focus fixation on decor and my home. Like you can see the background.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. But like, it's like, I want my house to look like no one lives in it. And so I was going back and forth like with this table and I could not let it go. I was cringing myself out because I was like, this is not a big deal. We do not need a $3,000 marble table. Like we don't have the money for that. Right. Like it's not important, but I could not get my brain to stop fixating on it. And that to me is so cringy. It's it's not important. It's not a big deal. Like, but.
Well, can I ask you a question though?
I'm still thinking about it.
is that not part of the way you manifest the life
it
that you want?
It is. However, the way that I go about it, like it can be very obsessive. It's like I am on my phone trying to find the dupe and whatever. And I'm like, there are things I have to work to do.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, I can be a little too obsessed.
I totally get it. I actually have learned that's also a like symptom of ADHD where you hyperfixate on one thing.
And our superpower.
Yeah, totally. And so I can be that way until that thing happens or I make it happen. So I've just decided that's a superpower and I'm not going to judge myself.
I'm not even cringed out. In my mind, I'm like, you need that table. That's the answer is you need to
get
that table.
How do we help? Yeah.
I support you getting that table.
Yeah. I've already said it's just 12 sessions. It's just, right. You know, like I'm already like per month. Totally. That's fine. Like that's not a big deal.
Yeah, you got it. You're good. Yeah. Get that table, girl.
My husband is mad.
Well, I will say, looking at your background, it looks like one of those fake Zoom backgrounds that people put up.
That's hilarious.
Pretend that they live in a nice house.
I leave to go like turn the AC on or something, and people go, "Oh, I thought that was a background."
Yeah, exactly.
That's a huge compliment. Thank you.
It looks. Yeah. The only thing that lets you know it's legit is that it says Spiritual Shit, which is the name of your podcast behind you.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah. Let's do that.
Okay, let's get into this. I mean, I know you, but people need to get to know you. So tell
us. I don't know her.
Right. That's true. Bean does not. Tell us a little bit about you. And I think our listeners, and I'm really interested in, you know, you're a spiritual advisor. What does that mean? And how did you come to be a spiritual advisor? What's your journey?
Well, to me, spiritual advising has everything to do with helping people become more empowered, because there's nothing to me more spiritual than people being able to know themselves. Yes. And it's not all about like being a guru or anything like that. Like that's like the last thing I want to be. But like helping people know themselves, like what does it mean to know yourself? What does it mean to peel off the layers of the crap that we, you know, pile on throughout our whole life? And understanding and knowing ourselves then, you know, reveals to us our intuition. Mm-hmm. To me, intuition is not something that we're gaining, or like it's not a skill we're developing necessarily. It's more about like what we're pulling away that we've told ourselves, like, oh, we can't do that, or I don't know anything, or I'm afraid to get it wrong, things like that. So being able to start from the ground up, helping people feel empowered in who they are and make the decisions that are going to be best for their life, that to me is like all of it. Yeah. But how did I become a spiritual advisor? So I was growing up really religious, super religious, and very curious from a very young age. I had a lot of spiritual experiences as a child where I would see angels and people, you know, creepy people walking into my room at night, things like that. To the point when I was like 10 years old, my dad was, it was this crazy situation where someone walked into our room. I thought it was my mom. They had the ponytail. It was the silhouette and everything. But they weren't saying anything. And they walked in kind of like a marionette. Like that's the way that they were walking in. I was like, this is super weird. And then they came and hung over my bed for a long time with this weird snarly noise. Very sixth sense, right?
Weird what noise?
Snarly. Snarling noise. Like that. I was like, what in the actual hell is this? So I'm like 10, you know, and I'm pulling the blankets over my head, and then they slammed the door a few times. And my siblings were also in the room, but they were sleeping. And so I was like, you know, I don't know what's going on. Anyway, the next morning I came out and I was like, Dad, Mom was in our room messing with us. My parents are pranksters. So like this was like par for the course for them. We were like, oh, they were messing with us, something like that. And my mom was like, absolutely not. You guys were slamming that door. We told you guys to go to bed and stop messing with the door. We heard you at our door. And, you know, and I was like, that wasn't us. That was you. You know, so we're going back and forth. And then I was like, you were walking in there like a puppet. You did this and you made this noise. And then my dad has this look on his face and he's like, okay, I know what this is. I see them too. And I was like, you see who too? You know, like this moment, and my dad pulling me aside and says, when I was little, I used to see this, that, and the other. And he kind of gave me this little small history, but they coded it in this, religious facade. Totally. Like, oh, it's demons. Like you have to like pray that this goes away, that, you know, like you don't.
That's scary. 10-year-old.
It's so scary. So scary. So I'm thinking like, I must've done something wrong. I don't want this gift. I don't want this. So anyway, you know, when my grandfather passed away at 16, he came to me in a dream and he said to me, go and talk to your father when you wake up in the morning and tell him Yadi said hi. And Yadi is what my dad used to call him when he was little, because he couldn't say daddy. And so I woke up and I was like, oh my gosh, that was such an important dream. So I walk in the room and say, I had a dream about Papa. And he jumps out of bed and he's like, what did he say? And I'm like, before I could get a chance to say it, he goes, Yadi said hi. And I was like, yeah, how did you know? And he was like, he came to me in a dream to tell me that you were going to say that he was there so we would know that this was not a dream and that he came to visit me.
Wow.
And that freaked me out. I was 16 years old and I was like, oh, like, I don't know. This is, I don't want to fuck with this. Like, this doesn't sound like
how did they explain that away religiously?
Like, they didn't. It was just kind of this moment. Like my dad was also kind of, I think, going through an awakening upon losing his dad and like, you know, other things. And so even though my parents, mostly my mom, are still quite religious, my dad has become definitely more fluid when it comes to those things. So anyhow, so like fast forward, I kind of like lost that ability or like was really like not trying to, you know, dig into it. I would still have a lot of dreams that would come true, but I wasn't paying a lot of attention to it until my grandmother passed away. And that dream was really intense. Like, I feel like this is going to go really long, but
no, we basically, like it.
Yeah, we're fascinated.
She passed away. And when she was passing, there were, you know, like the process of death can be long.
Yeah.
I was in the room with her and I had at this point kind of, you know, become an atheist. I was like, I don't know if I believe in this anymore. But while she was passing us, sitting in a room asking like, what happens after you die? Like, will you come back and let me know like what happens to make sure I'm not going to hell? Like, just don't want to be on the wrong side of this. And I was like 25, 26, I think. And so anyway, I had a dream a week later. She came to me and, you know, there was this portal, like it was in her house. Like, it was this really like fantastical scene. I wish I could paint it, but she was really small. Like a child almost, but looked like an adult. It was very strange. And she comes to me and the first thing she says to me is, it's a girl. She grabs me, it's a girl. And I'm like, it's a girl? Who's a girl? my cousin and my sister were pregnant both at the time, but they both had boys and no one else had a girl until I did. She told me it was a girl. So she met my daughter. And then the second thing she told me was something that my mom did for her during the funeral. She told me that my mom redid her makeup and, like, you know, she was really thankful that she, you know, spent time with her and her body after she passed. Aww. And she wanted to let my mom know that she was there and she saw that. So I told my mom, I had no idea, told my mom. My mom burst into tears, you know, just knowing that her mother was giving her this message. But my mom's still super scary around stuff like that.
Right.
She's still like, was a demon talking to you? I'm like, that was such a nice message. Like, you know, like, you know, there's too much fear there. Then the last thing she told me, she came to me and they were getting ready to take her way through this portal. She's like, I don't have a lot of time, but to answer your question, that, you know, me asking what happens after you die, she was like, it's not how they say, it's not how your parents have taught you. It's not what they say is going to happen when you die. I will be your guide. I will help you. You are a good person. You will do really amazing things and you will help a lot of people, but you know, it's not going to make sense right now, but just keep the path and I will help you. Aww. So I'm getting so many chills. I just feel like she's here.
Yeah, right. Is she here? Cause I have chills.
Yeah. So I just felt like, okay. Like, I felt that sigh of relief of like, wow, I'm not on the wrong path. Like, I know what it is that I need to do. And since then I've had many dreams about her in the guiding process of like finding my spirituality and connecting. I just randomly decided like I wanted to start playing with Oracle cards, you know, like 7, 8 years ago. And my mom got really upset because she was like, that's that stuff your grandmother used to do. Like, that's the stuff your grandmother used to play with or whatever. She used hang out with and they called them at the times the gypsies. And I don't know if that's the correct name to use anymore, but
she's not. Like, I know that it's not, but I know that that's exactly what.
That's what my mom said. I'm just repeating what she said.
Yeah, exactly.
She said she would go down there and they would do playing cards, but they would use them as divination and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, so I'm getting some of this information. So anyway. Long story short, like dreams were kind of the pathway into this trusting myself, this intuition and this guidance. And then I went through a divorce. I moved to New York. I had like finally meeting these people that are like, oh, I'm a psychic. And oh, me too. You know, like it was no big deal. It wasn't like here where it was like, oh, you're a psychic.
Right.
Oh, really? You're going to hell. You know, like it was just this like openness that I had.
I like how you threw that in at the end.
Yeah.
You're going to hell.
That was my experience.
Yeah,
like there were
sure.
People that were like, oh, we can't talk to you anymore. Yeah, you know, right. Like I was kind of excommunicated from a large part of my community because of the things I was practicing. So anyway, I found my people. I was able to like, you know, I went through the novelty of like sound baths and going to see every psychic I could find and, you know, just like things like that, where it was like I was really on the self-discovery process And it just came to a point where it was like, wow, like I feel like I've met my guides. I feel like I have an understanding. The intuition that I hear is really, really strong now. And again, like I said, it wasn't me discovering that was intuitive. It was me peeling off of all of the, no, you can't do that, or no, that's right. Evil, or you're making stuff up in your mind, things like that, and starting to vet that process. Now, I'm a very scientific thinker, mm-hmm. even though I do have a lot of spiritual experiences. I like data a lot.
Mm-hmm. Me too. So,
I would go through and I write in my notebook and I'm like, okay, on this date, like a guide told me this, like, and then, you know, try to vet it out and see if it was something that came true. But I mean, I was like hitting at like about 90% on, you know, verifying things afterwards when it would happen. So that's when I started my spiritual practice of trying to help other people and connect and practice my mediumship. And then, you know, it really kind of blew up while I was still living there. But then, you know, I came back home. And I was like, you know, I feel like I need to do something with this. I really want to find my community, because now I'm back in Kansas City, a place where I felt like I didn't fit in, or where people were looking at me funny, and I didn't have that. So I think it was 7 times in a week someone said to me, you should start a podcast. And I was like, okay, that's the 7th time someone said this. Like, I think I'm going to take the hint. And in my head, I was like, well, what am I going to talk about? Like, I don't know. Like, what should I call it? And I heard audibly, just audibly, spiritual shit.
Love.
You were like, that's done.
Such a good name.
Sign Thank me up.
Whatever spirit like, guide that was used to be in marketing or something.
I bet it was my grandmother, because she talked like a sailor. So
love it.
It was just this like moment of like, oh, okay. So yeah. So I started the podcast. I found my people. I, you know, like, as you know, more you've been on the show, just being able to connect with people and in the things that at the time were not mainstream, were not okay to talk about. Like, and this is what, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Like, how much has changed? Where now everybody talks about it like it's like the most common normal thing.
Yeah. I think though, lots of people in the communities we're in right now are talking about, but I still think a lot of people are like, what's happening here? That's Absolutely. Why I think it's great to have people like you on to really show that it's not like, you don't have to be so woo-woo and out there mm-hmm. to be able to be spiritual and practice.
Yeah. Cause to me, spirituality is just discovering your humanity.
Right.
Right.
Like, there, while people associate spirituality often with like crystals and cards and all that kind of stuff, and those things are fun and those things are amazing, and I'm wearing like several crystals right now where, you know, like I definitely believe in those things, but I don't know, I guess I feel like my mission is to, to kind of bring that down to earth, like like make it practical. really feel because like I'm not walking around in the, you know, caftan and wearing it, you know, like I'm saying, like that sometimes
but I like caftan.
This is what's spiritual. I'm wearing a Nirvana shirt. Like
I
dress like a boy most of the time. Like I just think that there is a way to bring it down to earth where people can trying to find a way that it relates to them. And then they decide what that looks like.
I do think that that's what the moment is calling for, is, you know, what I'm calling practical spirituality. I feel like when people ask me all the time, like, my purpose is to take these big metaphysical, sometimes woo-woo concepts and just help you understand practically how they work in your real life. But I'm curious, you know, I know from personal experience that transition from being in the closet to coming out of the closet can be really hard when the imposter syndrome wants to break in. And what I love that you said, because this was the same for me, is like the validation of the data was so, so important. You know, I'm sensing this thing. And then all of a sudden the person's like, how the hell did you know that? That really matters. And I'm curious for you, do you still feel that way when you're doing readings?
Yes.
Are there still moments when you're doing a reading and you're like, oh, I hope this is true. And then the validation really helps.
Yes. So what's really funny, I got to a point last year where I was like, you know what? I want to really dive into mediumship in a way that I haven't done before and study it. Mm. And so actually, is this a video podcast?
We have a YouTube. Yeah.
Check out our YouTube channel. Good plug.
Malia, thank you for this, because she needs to plug the YouTube channel in every episode. So I
get like 12. I get like 12 viewers. Enough. I'm not going to, I don't want to brag, but.
Do you see this? Like,
oh, is it your spiritual notebook?
this is not my journal. This is what I, when I'm doing readings, like when I'm pulling information out, I'm getting these little hits and bubbles or whatever. So I write everything down.
Oh.
Because what will happen in a session often is more than one person will come in.
Right.
And so, you know, I often ask them, don't tell me anything. I don't want to know anything. I want whatever comes through as peer, so we know for sure this is the person we're talking to.
Right.
And, but what people forget is that, like, when we open that channel, like, you might be prioritizing your dad, but your grandmother and your great grandmother are coming in too. So there may be details that do not align with the person you have in mind, but other people that are trying to come and talk to you will say something. So I'll do something where I'll park it, and I'll park that little detail over to the side, because if something does come in where it is pretty urgent that other person wants to come through, I can go back and refer and go, and this thing about this person is that, and they're like, oh my God, yeah, you know, and then it's like, okay, cool. Then I'll also have some sessions. One time I had this session where it felt like it was going nowhere. And I was like, it's the worst feeling. Yeah. Cause it's like, oh, I feel like I'm failing this person. Totally. Each new client is like a new interview.
Yes.
And you know, you don't want to be there, you know, like, and they've spent money, you know, like, it's just this whole thing.
Yeah.
So I had to build my confidence to really stick with what I was feeling, because what I learned was last year I did mediumship. I did like 8 sessions a day for
that's, I think, so 3 exhausting. Months
or something. Yeah. Like, I did over 500 sessions in a very short amount of time.
That's draining.
Because I wanted to see if it was true every time. I wanted to see if, like, the symbol would come in the same every time. And there's flexibility, but now that I know the symbols and I've built my own library for myself, because it's different for every person. Every person is going to have a different library. Then I know the flexibility of what that means. So sometimes I have something called a distance symbol, for instance. Mm. And a distance symbol can mean you have emotional distance with this person, you have physical distance with this person, or this person passed a long time ago.
Okay.
And so without that practice, I wouldn't have known that this particular symbol applies to these several different things. So
you are having to build a scientific method around this for yourself.
100%. Wow. So I'm not guessing. So I get these symbols. I work with my guides and I'm like, okay, so this usually means this. Does that resonate with you for that person? So, and that's just how it works for me. For other people, it might work very differently. But in that practice and being able to see that, like, there will be times where we've done the session and it's like, okay, it doesn't feel like it's going well, or like a lot of details feel like they're missing, because I don't necessarily do fortune telling, and I'm very clear about that. Like, I'm not doing future stuff, but what will happen sometimes is future event stuff will show up.
Right.
I'm not sure that they're future. They don't know what it means. And then I get an email half a year later and they're like, oh my God, this thing happened. I just got 2 emails a couple days ago where they were like, we had no idea what this meant. And we just kind of, like, you know, she in her mind threw it away. And then when it happened, it was like crazy. There was one session where I kept talking about a fire. And this grandmother, who was the mother of her mother-in-law, was coming through. And so, and it was just this kind of like back and forth. No, there's a fire. Like, did she die in a fire? And they're like, no. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And it was like a big warning. And I was like, I really don't know what to tell you about this, except maybe be cautious kind of in the future. A month later, they're at a wedding or, you know, something like that. And the mother, who is the daughter of the grandmother who came through, is watching my client's child in a hotel while they're waiting for the wedding stuff to go on. And they had this big fire. And so, like, they made it out okay and they were fine. But, like, and I was like, well, how does it serve them? Because she wasn't able to tell her mother-in-law that particular thing. But that awareness of, like, what could have happened. And so her making this mention of, like, there would be a fire.
Wow.
Anyhow, so, like, I can't facilitate how that works, but just knowing that, like, okay, we'll see if I hadn't written that down.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. And her coming back and telling me, and it's like, okay, so it's working. Like, the, even the things we can't put in any places, it's still valid.
I feel like it's also working to further fuel you and your method, you know, you to get that information was part of the bigger plan too, because I think, you know, obviously you're confident in your abilities. You're the one that's seeing and sensing and, like, living with this since you're a child. But I just can't, I don't know. I feel like imposter syndrome is such a gripping thing for all of us, that I love that what's happening is that your guides are constantly filling you with this information about how real this is for you.
Yeah. And it doesn't just apply to mediumship.
Right.
I recently, for whatever reason, when I write, like, if I'm just writing, like, journaling or whatever, I have this natural tendency to want to rhyme the words. No idea why. Like, it's always just kind of been there. And I'm like, stop trying to make it rhyme. But recently, after I had this insane mushroom trip that was just intense.
We know something about that.
Mm-hmm. Like intense in a good way or intense in a bad way?
Both. Yes. Oh. There was a very, very bad part of the trip and there was a very, very good part of the trip. But my guides told me humility. Like to this, you've gone through this trip to have great humility because great powers cannot be given to those who do not have humility.
Right.
Wow. And so I was learning like intense lesson around that. But soon after, this is just, I mean, like 3 months ago, soon after I had bought this book. Where is it? I think I put it downstairs. I had bought this journal and I was like, oh, like I'm really drawn to octopuses for some reason. So I got this octopus stamping to like put on the top of it. And I was like, this is my spell book. I can feel it. And I started writing out these spells and these spells, I'm not joking. Like I wrote out a car, a spell for a brand new car. Cause we've been having car trouble for like 6 months. It's too long of a story to tell you, but basically somehow manifested a lot of money to be able to buy a brand new car. And it was like within a week's time. And I was like, hold up. This is crazy. Like
is
I haven't
coming
been able to manifest
to
like this.
Are
yes,
the
coming
spells
into
are
my,
coming
in my
to
head.
You?
Yeah. Okay. Like it'll start off like just with a phrase, like just one of the lines. And then it's like, ooh, I should write a spell about that. And I sit down and then have to write it. But anyway, I was like, where is this coming from? Like, you know, am I a witch? Am I a magician? Am I something like that? You know? And what's been super crazy about that is like, I've had this super crazy draw to octopuses. So I went and got a tattoo just a few days ago.
Oh, right? Oh,
God, guys, she has a gorgeous octopus on her forearm.
But I was supposed to get something else. Last minute, the artist was like, hey, I'm not able to do that tattoo. It's got some realism. I'm more this style. And I was like, I've been thinking about this octopus for a really long time. So I'll go ahead and get that. But the last minute, I had this intuitive guidance to say, you should put magician on there. And I'm like, no idea why. I wanted to put Heka, which is actually the ancient Egyptian Coptic way to say magic. But my guide said, don't put that word on your body.
What?
It's a very powerful word. Do not put that word on your body. So I was like, okay, well, put magic. And then the morning of the tattoo, they said, no, put magician. Uh-huh. Magician is the important word. So me having no idea of why I'm feeling this draw to put this on my skin in the first place. I mean, I have lots of tattoos, so it doesn't matter. But like having this draw to put this on my skin, there was an intuitive reason that feels like it was drawing me to that. So my spell book has the octopus. My armor has the octopus. And then I got this reading from a numerologist. Got this intuition of a reading that I had maybe like 4 years ago. You know how like Google or Apple will show you like, remember from 4 years ago?
This day,
yeah.
4 years ago.
So there are pictures that I took of my notebook of the notes I had from this particular reader. And I was like, oh my God, it says in here that I'm really good at spell work. And this is why you've had a dark past with magic. And this is how you clean it up. And this is your karma. And I had forgotten about it completely. So I scheduled a reading with him. And the reading happened to land a day after I got this octopus tattoo. And he says, according to your numerology, you have nothing but eights all over your chart. You are an insane manifester.
Love.
And he was like, you are a magician. Like said it just outright. Wow. My husband was sitting there and he was like, whoa. he says, the magi, that like the sorcerer, this is a part of your lineage and who you've been as a person. You need to identify as the magician. And I was like, there's no way you could have known that. So I showed him the tattoo.
Wow.
And he's like, you know why you're drawn to octopuses, right? And I was like, no. And he's like, it's the eight.
Right.
It's octopus eight. You know, I was like, So stuff like that is super weird because it's like I wasn't thinking about that consciously or actively, but the intuition, the opening, the connecting to those guides, the meaning that's coming into my mind to help me know myself. And that to me is all spirituality is priceless. Like we come back full circle. It's like it is to know yourself, to understand yourself, to know your power, become empowered and not – be fooled by the matrix. Right. Yeah, we know we got taxes and all that shit. Like, but you also have your own power. And so me leaning into that is not only in the mediumship or the divinations and astrology and so on. It's like, what can I do to improve the quality of my life and the quality of the life of the people around me?
Yeah.
And there ain't no harm in that if you ask me.
No.
Man. Wait, I have two questions, which are just based on things that you said. One, how did you start interacting with your spirit guides? Was it through other mediums or did you just figure it out yourself?
So the process of spirit guide is interesting because I have always had this voice in my head that has been very, very loud of like someone like I have a very loud inner dialogue.
Right.
But there is definitely a difference between my inner dialogue and the softer voice that used to come in that I've always had accompanying me to tell me it's going to be okay. It's going to be this, it's going to be that. So I didn't know what that was until I started doing more spiritual research and people saying, those are your guides. And then once my grandmother passed and she was coming to me in dreams, I could feel like I could hear her voice. And I thought, well, that very much feels like a guide, you know? So I started the practice of automatic writing, where I would, like, because I love to journal, right. I would write out a sentence or a question, and then I would just go duck, duck, goose, duck, duck, goose, duck, duck, goose, to kind of clear my mind. And then, like, there would be, like, you could just kind of feel when the words would come in. And then I would write that down. And that was a practice of 7 years of just, like asking the question, writing it down, asking the question, writing it down, seeing what came to me. So I had developed very strongly this connection to my guides, where I can hear them in my mind's ear. I'm very clear audience. So, like, it's like I can hear very clearly when they're telling me something, but also in the practice of doing that, of that automatic writing, I learned how to channel. And so, like, there have been these times where even while I'm interviewing, I go into this kind of trance space where it's just like, like, I can't really even control what it is that I'm saying, because I've integrated the guide or higher self's voice into my own.
Wow.
Jesus. Did I answer both your questions?
Yeah, no.
No, she has, I have. I didn't even.
Speechless.
Fascinated. Yeah. This is what happens. But you are particularly fascinating. But when we have, sometimes when we have guests on, and I find them as fascinating as I find you, my mouth opens and I forget that I'm supposed to be hosting, and I feel like I'm watching a show that I love, and I forget that I have to participate.
And then the way that those episodes sound are like I'm pushing Melissa aside and just asking all the questions, but it's really because it would be dead air if I didn't.
And check out our YouTube. My mouth is just like this, agape the entire time. I can't speak because my mouth doesn't move up and down. My second question, you answered the first one. My second question, are your sessions that you are referring to that you do, 12 sessions for a table,
which Bean and I will be booking immediately. I'm going to beat you to it.
When we got off, I was going to be like, you know, I'm your next client, right? One, but two, is it only like, do I have to come to you and say, I'm trying to contact this one who's passed on, or can I just come to you as me? I don't have anyone that I'm like, I need to connect with this person.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I have a follow-up question to that, but I want to put a pin in. So please remind me that I want to ask a follow-up question.
I remember. My mouth is about to open.
Aliyah, I know you're not.
Okay.
So mostly what will happen, if they book a mediumship session, I will ask them, do you want to speak to a loved one or do you want to speak to your spirit guides? Because it is a different process of connecting. The spirit guides might come in anyway, but the spirit guides are so much easier for me to talk to than ancestors are. So I'll usually start with, if they do have someone in mind, it's like, let's prioritize them, because it might take them a little bit, because there are certain triggers that can come through when someone has passed. Sometimes you're reliving the worst day of your life by trying to connect with them.
Yeah.
And that can cause a contraction in the energy that makes it a little bit more difficult to be able to communicate with them, because I use you as the proxy. You are the Wi-Fi router to your loved one. So I use the frequency of your voice.
Say that again.
You are the proxy to your loved one. I use you as a Wi-Fi router. Because I used to do mediumship directly through myself, and I got very sick doing that. So I was like, no more. I redirect the energy through you. So if, for instance, you're super intuitive and you're very open, you don't have a lot of expectation around it, the session goes so much better.
Oh my God, that's me.
If you have a lot of grief still associated with it, which is why I tell people wait, you know, 6 months or so after a passing to allow yourself to process some of that, because sometimes it's a little bit too close.
Right.
And so if, for instance, if someone is passed of self-harm or a drug overdose, anything like that, things that feel really traumatic, my guides actually have blockers or blinders for me on that, because I have some people in my past that I've lost that way. And sometimes it can be very triggering to see what they went through, and that can take me out of the space, take me out of where I can do my work. So they'll kind of put a blinder on it and put just a boop, here's a symbol for it. You can't see it. So I won't know a lot of the intimate details that I might know about other people's death. If they passed of health reasons, I'll usually know, I can feel it in my body. But if it's something more traumatic, like, you know, my aunt passed away from a drug use. She thought it was something else, and someone gave her something that ended up killing her. Like that sometimes will block me from being able to connect in that way. So it is important for them to prioritize who they want to speak to, so that way, because it can take it's like a developing picture. You know, sometimes when you're looking, those of us who are old enough to know how film works, when you put it in the developer, it takes time to kind of rise from the surface, and sometimes you don't have all the details yet, and that can take some time.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful way to put it, that developing picture.
Everything she said has been like such a It's such a useful way for mainstream people to really understand her message.
This is why she has a number one Apple podcast.
Yeah, which I'll also pick your brain about later.
Okay, I have a follow-up question that I want to get to your book. I really want to talk about your book.
Same.
I've always been curious, and I ask my mentor, who's a medium, this all the time. Like, my, you know, loved ones who have passed speak Farsi. Mm-hmm. So what happens when there's a language barrier and you're reading for someone has ancestors that don't speak English?
Yeah, well, because it doesn't come through in language. It comes through feeling. So like there's a way that translates to the soul that like it's very easy. It doesn't matter what language you speak. Like it's still going to come through. However, I have had souls come through and it's like I can hear a little bit of the language where it's like, okay, they definitely speak. And sometimes an accent will come through and I'll know that they speak a different language. And if there is difficulty in the communication, they'll more likely to give me symbols. So there are workarounds for sure.
Yeah.
But there's times where, I mean, I don't speak great Spanish, but words will come through that like particular nicknames and things like that will come through. Like I have a deep understanding of just language symbolism. A communication degree or whatever, but like there are things that can come through that it's like, this is really hard to describe. There are sounds, for instance, someone will come through and I'm hearing an Ian, like that sound. And I'm like, is their name Ian? But like, it's Steven. Their name is Steven. So it's like that. It's like kind of like that, like a developing picture, but for your ears. Sometimes I'll see things. Confused.
Can you imagine you just feel things?
And no, it's really hard.
Yeah, but me, I would be like, I don't know. I would be like, I don't know. I heard something. I don't know.
But it won't always be super close. And then there was, I had some, a really potent experience. The man was from Iran and had moved here when he was younger. One of his parents, I think, stayed behind and ended up passing away there. Mm-hmm. But then, I mean, clear as day and sound like, you know, we're talking right now, but he was like, they don't speak English. How did you? And I was like, I just don't think it works that way.
Yeah.
Like when you get to the other side, like you've had many, many lifetimes, at least that's my belief. And like, I think translating through the soul is something they definitely could do.
Yeah.
You just don't understand it because we can't do it here.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really, it's like a universal language that the souls speak.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about your upcoming book. Comes out November 19th. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Oh, wow. It's my mom's birthday.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
Really? Sagittarius.
Meaningful manifestation. So listen, I mean, I know from being in the process myself that writing a book is a labor of love and tears and joy and happiness. So congratulations.
Yes.
That is out in the world. That is a big deal and a big accomplishment.
Is this your first book?
It's my third. Oh, but it's my first one that I'm with a big publisher.
Yeah.
Wow.
Congrats. Yeah, so we want to hear about the book, but we know that in the book you introduce this Imagine method. So I also want you to tell us a little bit more about the Imagine method, because what I imagine is that this book is about putting this power back in people's hands instead of, you know, I always say I don't want people to rely on me as their higher self. I want to introduce them to their higher self and then become obsolete. And I can really feel that that's your purpose as well.
Yes.
So tell us about that and how the book helps people do that.
So it's interesting because I was driving, I was on a road trip and it just came to me. Like it was like a download. It was like, oh, the word imagine. Because there is something about the word imagine in the context of it that it is and imagination, Asian or whatever. It's like the process of doing something. Maj being the magi, magic, imagination. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. I really like that. But the imagine method stands for inception. It's like, where are you starting from? Like kind of looking at your process and in your life and like, what is it that you want? But like starting from is really important because the idea, we're often looking forward, but we're not looking in the present of like where we're actually at.
Yeah.
And so for instance, if I'm trying to manifest a drive to California, I live in Kansas City. You might live in New York. And so there are going to be a difference in time of how we get there. And that could, you know, be then privilege. I have a nicer car than you do, or, you know, you have more gas money than I do, whatever. Like we all have these different attributes that we're born into or that we've worked towards or whatever, that things that we even cannot control that will dictate how long it will take us to get to that said point. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be observant of that because there are complexities and marginalization and things that are quite unfair in our world that we need to not take on to ourselves as like a version of our own self-worth or not, no self-worth. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is just kind of how the world is and where it starts. Can we have an acceptance for where we're at first before we get started on this path? So then you have manifestation, which is, what do you want? Very plainly, everybody knows what manifestation is, but what do you want? Like being able to clarify what that is, because unfortunately, a lot of people don't know what they want. You need to vet out whether or not it's an inauthentic desire or an authentic desire. Like, are the desires something you're influenced by? Are your parents pushing you to do get that doctor degree? Is it, you know, oh, I want that Fendi bag because everybody else has it? Or is it something that's really important to you and means something to you? Do I really want this table?
Because you do. No, you need it.
Symbolizing,
keep thinking about
something
it
for my family, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, like, what is it you want? So then you go into, I felt like I was gonna like burp. Cut that out.
Please do. Please do.
I saw a medium once, by the way, who had to burp.
I have the same thing.
You
it's
do
burping and yawning. Yeah.
Yeah. She would burp and yawn a ton in the session.
It's like energy release.
You were like, am I boring you? Is my life boring you?
Up front, she said, I'm going to make these sounds. It was over the phone. What did you say? Why was it?
It's energy release. Like when you're having the energy come through your body needs somewhere to put it sometimes. Wow. And it's like, get rid of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway. So A is anti-belief. Like why can't you have what it is that you want? What are the things that you're telling yourself? Sometimes those are very real things.
Yeah.
Like sometimes it's like, okay, I can't do that because my legs don't work. You know, like things like that. Being able to acknowledge, what is the anti-belief? Is this the truth or is this the story you're telling yourself? Because a lot of times it's just the story we're telling ourselves.
Right.
There are very real parameters and barriers that can prevent us from getting to those things. But if that is the case, then we have to then grow. So then that's the G. Mm. And so like, what does it mean to grow? What needs to happen in my life in order to change? Like, what does that look like for me? So for instance, this to me is a really great example, but I have like body health, weight issues, like have my whole life, not my whole life, after college. And dealing with that, I'm always shitting on myself about like, why can't you just get to the gym? Why can't you do this? Or what's happening? You're so lazy. Like I'm always saying mean things to myself as we do. But when I went through this process, I was like, okay, where am I starting from? This is how much I weigh. This is what I'm going through. I'm stressed. Hormones are all over the place. My health is going on. I have a lot of kids, whatever. Like going through and just acknowledging that. And then what do I want to manifest? I want to be in a healthy body. I wanted this. I wanted that. Why do I want to be in that? Like, is it just a healthy body or is it a skinny body? Has the patriarchy required me to be small as a person and not take up space? Like, what are the actual reasons? What am I actually wanting here? I want to be healthy and be around for my kids for a long time. Okay. So there's no weight associated with that. There's something different there. Anti-belief. Why can't I have what I want? Well, you know, like I'm not willing to go to the gym in this way, or I'm not willing to eat in this way, or I don't have the time or the capacity, or maybe I am doing all these things, but there's a health issue that's kind of in the way. And the growth point for me was like, all right, well, how do I get around this? What does it mean to get around this? Am I just trying to have to go the direct route that I think everybody else goes that because it works for them, or is something else stopping me? Is something else in my way? And I was started to, and this has been a few year long process. So, you know, this is not something that happens overnight, but I had to go into, why can't I have what it is that I want? What is stopping me? There must be something more than just laziness.
Right.
There has to be something more than just health problems. I feel a very significant block around this thing. And so I was doing some meditating. I was like really, it was actually while I was writing my book, I started to figure out what the thing was. And I had this flash of, and you know, trigger warning, I'm about to talk about SA. When I was in college, I was kidnapped and I was taken to a place. We were all getting in cars together with some seniors in college or whatever, this football player. I'm not going to give him too much airtime. And he took me to a different theater than everybody else went to.
Oh my
God. And then things happened that should not have happened.
Oh God. So, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. So me going through that let me know that me being in an attractive body or what's conventionally attractive is not safe for me. And especially since I was a Christian and like, you know, there was all this stuff, all these rumors had started afterwards. And then it was like, my purity was at stake and like, oh, you know, like
that's
she's
horrible.
Someone who sleeps around. And I was like, I didn't do anything. You know, there just being a lot of trauma around that. And I remember that day, the day after going to the hall, student hall or whatever, cafeteria, and sitting down and eating three Belgian waffles, like just because I was so Like I was so dysregulated. I was so just feeling, you know, it was a lot. So going into that space thinking like, okay, my 18-year-old brain was like trying to find a way to cope. Like, how do I keep myself safe? How do I keep myself pure? How do I keep myself from the leering eyes of men who are like, since I developed boobs at 13, always feeling like my body was problematic. And so from there on, that's where the weight came from. It just came on and on and on. And so, and I've yo-yoed weighted, you know, dieted and all that, but every single time I lose a bunch of weight, it's like, oh, like I feel unsafe.
Oh, it's dangerous.
It's dangerous for me to be there. Mm-hmm. So I have to go then back into, okay, what's my higher priority? Mm. Because when we talk about our higher priority, my higher priority is safety over health, right? Yeah, I wrote it out and I cried. I sobbed like a baby while I wrote this. I said, I am more afraid of men than I am of death due to bad health.
Wow. Isn't that something that is just the fucking truth?
That statement alone gave me grace, gave me kindness, gave me acceptance, gave me love to that girl. Mm. Instead of always telling her like, you did it wrong, you did it, you know, look at you, you're, you know, all of that, and said, oh my goodness, you've been just trying to keep me safe this whole time.
Of course. Right. In a very non-condescending way, I'm so proud of you for coming to that conclusion in the time that you needed to come to it.
Yeah.
Did you have that memory throughout life, or were you brought back to it?
I blocked it. I actually didn't even see his face in my mind ever again.
Yes.
Until I had that moment, I was like, I can't believe I've forgotten about
this. And
you
sobbed for it. You grieved for her.
Yes. Yeah, yes.
Absolutely.
So just to take a little caveat out, something I should have said before we got started, but maxims are super important. Like, what are your top 5 maxims to have a good life? Mm. Like, listing out those things will give you a greater framework for this Imagine Method, because each time you go through one of those items, you can use the Imagine Method to kind of correlate what it is that you want and the process you're going to go to get it. So for instance, if on my maxim list, my top thing is safety, well, like there are going to be things that come underneath it that are not going to be as much of a priority. So if they're going to be competing, I'm always going to pick safety first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you want, for instance, a 6-figure job, but time with your family is your top maxim, well, guess what? Like if you're going to have to negate that for time with your family, you might not get that job, and you will think you didn't manifest it because you didn't think positively enough. But your energetic maxims are saying, I don't want that job.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I am so glad that you are saying this, because I don't think that people talk about this enough in manifestation, which is the wholeness of everything you're trying to manifest. Like, we can get so hyper-focused. And I know for me, it's been my career. But actually, my number one maxim is being there for my children while they're still at home. And I hear sometimes my guide saying, hey, what you want is coming in due time, so that you can also have this thing you really cherish, which is that you are home every day when they come home from school, and you are making their snacks and like all these things that matter to me that I didn't have, because not my mom wasn't nurturing. She just was working constantly to help us survive. So I just think that that's a breakthrough concept, this idea of maxims and being in context of everything that you desire, not just the hyper-focus.
Right. And the reason why I said 5 is because it's really hard to keep track of like 10, 20, so on. But there are categories that they kind of fit in. So, you know, time with your family, a romantic partner, your passions achieved, travel, inspiration, financial security, things like that. Right. And like, since financial security is the lowest on my maxim list, like when it comes down to it, it's like, okay, do I take on another client and fill my schedule with time, or do I get to hang out with my kid and have a day off and go to the park? Like, I'm going to choose that.
Right.
Now, there may be a time in my life where that switches, where it's like, okay, well, now she's older now, and that's not as much of a priority for me. So now I'm going to take that extra client or do the extra work, or, you know, whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
But I think that that's super important, because a lot of times people think that they're supposed to be on and manifesting all the time. Me. And it's like, no, this is a seasonal thing. Yeah. It's meant to be seasonal. You're not supposed to be like, go, go, go. A flower doesn't bloom year round.
Right.
So that's where we get into integration, because like growth is like that, like what needs to change? What do I need to acknowledge? Like, what part of my anti-belief is the story or the truth?
Mm.
And that's what I did with, you know, my experience here. And I had to change it. Growth for me was, okay, I don't want to be skinny. I want to be strong.
Right. Yeah.
So changing, rearranging like what health and wellness looks like to me. I can leg press 550 pounds.
Fuck yeah, you can, like, girl.
Wow. I can kick a hole in the wall.
Yeah, you can.
And when I go to the gym and I load those packs up, those plates up, and the guys are looking at me like,
yeah, right.
Come on, really, her, you know? And then I'm doing 10 sets with them, and the joy I get.
Oh, God, that feels good.
The joy I get. The hair flip that I do, you know? Totally. Got my nails stuck on it. And everything. And I'm like, that makes me feel healthy. I feel strong. So I've rearranged that, and I'm still working on that because the imprintation of, you know, body image and all that is like forever going. But that was a way that I could rearrange my maxims and manifest something that was actually good for me, not manifesting something that I think I want based on what the world tells me I should be. Yes. And that to me is so fucking empowering because then you integrate it. It's like, okay, what are the practices I need to do to make this a daily thing? What are the practices I need to do to really identify with it? It's the changing of the person. So then you move into N, which is noticing, and noticing are like the synchronicities, noticing the change. Like sometimes the synchronicities are things that you're doing, very active things that you're doing very practically. But sometimes it's the universe being like, I saw you, girl.
Yeah.
We getting ready to bring that man in, you know, like little details. It might not be the person, but it's like, you're on your way.
Right.
I had that when I was manifesting my partner, and it was, what was that day? February 2nd. No, 22nd. So 222 of 2020. I had a dream that my partner came to me and said, wait for me. And I was like, ooh, like that felt very real. That felt very important. So then after that, I, you know, in ways that I had not before, because I had gone to Bali, I'd done the Eat, Pray, Love thing. I was like, all right, I started to realize that I can't attract a partner because there's no space for anybody in my life. I felt like I had to do everything myself, and I'm hypervigilant, hyper independent. So there's no space for anybody to come in. So when I opened that up and says, I'm ready for an equal and capable partner, I'm ready for someone to come into my life that I want to help me. Like, I'm okay to receive help, disparaging the belief that I'm not worthy enough to have help. It was like all of a sudden the light went on and I was visible. And suddenly all these really attractive and very like nice looking men, you know, like people that had things going for them were like interested in me. And I never experienced that before.
Yeah,
I was like, suddenly I'm visible. What? You know? So anyway, 4 months later, I meet my husband.
Wow.
And so that little like, you know, I could have gone down the route where it was like, well, they noticed me and now they're, you know, they've walked away and I haven't heard back from them. So I guess I'll never have anybody. Or I could go, no, this is the universe saying you've made progress.
Right.
We see it. We see you, you know, and giving me that little nod and saying, just, it's not too far away. So just keep the course, basically. Yeah. So and notice
that perception, super important. That perception shapes, that perception is so important because it shapes your entire reality. The fact that you perceive the progress, perceive what's coming to you, makes it more real and therefore more of it comes.
Yes. And the thing about, you know, when The Secret came out and I felt like this is the step that was kind of missing is that, you know, affirmations are great, like, and positive thinking is great. And all of those things work if you've done all of these other steps first.
Right. Right.
Like it works super well when you have an acknowledgement of where you're at. You have acknowledgement of your stories and the scripts that you're telling yourself. You have an acknowledgement of your socioeconomic status and any marginalizations you might acquire or privileges you might acquire. And then being able to see it from a different perspective of instead of like from a victim mindset, but like some people are actual victims. I hate when I hear manifestation where it's like, how is that, you know, story serving you? And it's like, you know, like I might be in a war-torn country.
Right.
Like, how am I supposed to manifest out of this? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that being said, however, some of those people I've seen are happier than people who have everything. So there is definitely a perspective and a positional aspect where what we're looking at can be the most beautiful or the most ugly thing. And we could be looking at the same thing.
That's right.
So that 100%. Does play a role. I don't want to negate that completely.
Yeah.
But I do want to say that like in that process, if your mindset is in a bad space, then it's going to be very difficult for you to notice the universe being like, hey, hold on just a little bit longer. We're going to get you over this hump. We're just trying to teach you something right now.
That's right.
And that to me leads then to expansion. Expansion is what happens once you get the manifestation. To me, manifestation is a process of learning yourself. It is learning what you want, who you are, and you start that process all over again. You guys know, like you've manifested something. And you're like, all right, on to the next thing. Why? Because this is our process of growth.
Growth.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not good at manifesting, but it sounds amazing.
Well, that being said, let's unpack that. Let's unpack that.
Okay.
Let's go for it. Book a session, girl.
Planning on it. Already sold.
But if you're in that space where you say, I'm not good at manifesting, right?
Or then, I don't know how to properly manifest. Is that better?
None of the things you're saying are true, but I'm gonna let Aliyah deal
with it. All right. I'm ready.
So if you're framing that, like I'm not good at manifesting, then anything that you've ever manifested in your life, you won't notice. Because like we're all natural manifestors. We're all natural, like I want something. I'm going to go get it. You said, oh, I want some cookies. I went to the store, manifested. Like that's the elementary part of it. But like, you know, you guys starting this podcast, right? You had an idea and now you're doing it. That is manifestation. There's no proper way to do it. However, there is a better way to do it. There's a way that increases your ability to get things going and utilizing your magic to get those things to move over the hump. The trouble is that when we're in the expansion period, nobody talks about what happens when you expand and you get that manifestation and you don't want it anymore, or you want something different, or you want something better. You'll think you manifested incorrectly when you were just manifesting to an older version of yourself.
Yes.
So what do you do if you've manifested?
Again,
you start the process all over again. So for instance, I manifested the child, the partner, the home in a 6-month period, like an insane short amount of time. But I had been working on that for 20 years.
Right.
And so it looks like it happened fast. It looks like I was bad at manifesting. But if I had had any of those things at 27, oh no,
you wouldn't have been ready.
I was not ready for that. I was not ready for that.
Yeah.
So even though it took a long time and then it then you know, went over the hump and was like, all right, you got it done. Here you go. I could have said I was bad at it, or it was just in its perfect timing.
That's right. Okay. We could talk to you for 7 hours. Oh, I have a last question for you.
I keep forgetting we're on a show.
Yeah.
Go.
Okay. This is my question for you. We are in a time right now as a species.
Yeah.
We, you know, Bean and I talk a lot on this podcast about the reality of the time that we're living through, of the division, of the separation, of the fear, the hatred. And I was curious, and maybe I'm being called to ask you, what message do your guides have for us right now?
I love this question.
As a collective around this moment that we're in.
Wow. Let me check with them. Okay. Well, I think a big part of it is unity. We're not just unity, love in general. Like we are so divided and so polarized because we're allowing social media, the news and other things to kind of swipe us into this fear mode, swipe us into what we're afraid of. And we're all kind of afraid of the same thing. It's just we're afraid of it in different ways or different perspectives. It's manifesting in different ways. And like, the way that we're approaching it is that this person is separate from me.
Right.
And because they're separate from me, they want different things than I want. And, you know, like we're looking at our election, for instance, and no matter where you stand on the spectrum, you know, like there's this part of it, us versus them.
Yeah.
When for sure. like, when the powers that be, I guess, who run this world benefit from that illusion.
Absolutely.
But where we could really foster a better sense of being is to say, okay, like I see myself in that person. Right. That person is afraid of something. And even though they're handling it in a way that I don't think they should handle it, let me withhold judgment in this moment and just send them love. Because like in that regard, it's so hard. I'm very judgmental. And I'm very much trying not to be. I do think I have the gift of discernment. So I was going to say,
it's called discernment.
Discernment is definitely there. But there can be these elements where I personally feel so saddened by how hateful people can be. Like something that really bothers me is watching the comments on social media and the things that people will say to each other. And it's like, awful. Would you ever dare say that to someone's face?
No.
So we're watching what looks like the algorithm controlling the most engaging thing, the thing that gets us the most angry, the thing that gets us the most, I'm going to say something, you know, like the thing that takes us out of our peace and puts us into that action state where it's like, this is justice to me. I must say something to this person. And it doesn't allow us to take a beat and say, you know what, like, that's probably just a bot, you know, like things like that, where we're able to remove that anger and send love instead. And so I have this entity that I channel, Erasmus. After my mushroom trip, they were like, Erasmus is just different versions of you. We couldn't tell you until this point, until you knew. And I was like, holy shit, I'm very wise. but this element of where we have been so, we think that social media is our real world. And it's just not.
Right.
And so they're like, if you're feeling hateful and you're feeling scared and you're feeling all of those things, step away. Step away from the phone. Step away from the TV. Step away from the news. It's not to not be engaged. Knowledgeable what's happening in the world, but not to be inundated, not to be swept up by it. Because the sweeping is like, there are dark forces in this world. I'm very, very aware of that. Even though we are all one, there is no dark without light. Like there's no shadows. Like the higher the light gets, the darker the shadows get, right? So there is this duality, polarity that we live within that is not going anywhere, okay? Mm-hmm. We're not going to have this what they call kumbaya world where everybody is unified and everybody's okay. That's just not how it's going to work. But for us to see that if things are, feel like they're getting worse, then somewhere they have to be getting better. It's you know, the hermetic laws. Like if this one goes up, something must come down. As above, so below, so within, so without, you know, whatever how it goes. So like that element of observing and not just sinking into the fear. Bad news travels faster than good news does, right?
Totally true.
So we then, surmise that this is our whole world and this is what's happening, but we forget there are also really amazing things happening on the other side.
That's right.
So if we can kind of turn our attention another way and say, okay, how can I infuse this with love instead? That is the question that I've been asking myself over and over every time I encounter someone being hateful or ridiculous or belligerent. And I'm like, I'm going to hold my tongue. How can I infuse love here instead?
How
can I infuse empathy? How can I infuse? And it sounds like I'm a saint. I'm not. But like that consciousness of just what does it mean to infuse love? And in this way, we are activating our own power.
Yeah.
Because I believe like as a collective, our strongest power is love.
You're right.
Like, at the point of even being here, collectively speaking, when I do mediumship, the one thing that comes through every single time is I love you. Mm-hmm. I love you. They are our loved ones. Why do we want to connect with them? Why is it that when someone we love passes away, we feel so much grief?
So much
it
love.
Is the absence of the love. There's nowhere to go. So like our purpose is love, to be here in love, to connect with people in love, to give our love, to receive love. And when we're not doing that, we're not activating our purpose. So like what we're watching is people forgetting who they are and forgetting their purpose and thinking that it comes into a space of judgment. And I think a lot of people feel hopeless too. And in that hopelessness, it makes them feel angry.
Right.
And that anger then is like, you know, adjudicated to the closest thing to them.
That's right.
Like, it's like, oh, so now I'll make this judgment on you because that makes it feel like I'm being productive and I'm doing something about it.
Right.
And in reality, you know, it's just adding to the noise. Right. I got a friend who, she has a big heart. She's a really good person, but she's become so swept by what's happening in the world that, you know, it's all she posts about. It's all she talks about. And now she's gotten to this place where, you know, she says things like, I hate this world. Like, look at these people doing this. I hate the world. I hate people. I hate this. I hate that. And, you know, we see it on the other end as well. But her anger around feeling hopelessness, around the love that she wants to be in the world has now turned her into someone who's also what I call a hater. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, then she's, you know, remiss of the love that she could feel in her heart of the work that she wants to do or how she wants to connect. But instead has been inundated with the fear and the lack of empathy and no one's listening to me. No one can hear. Why does no one else feel as urgent as I do about this particular thing? And, you know, in my own mind, she's even come to me and been like, why aren't you saying anything? I was like, if you listen to my podcast, I've definitely said things. But I don't engage on social media in this way because I don't think it's beneficial. I've looked at the studies. I've done the research. People tend to be more ingratiated in their own opinion, wherever they were originally standing. The only thing that changes is if people like or don't like their post, maybe then they'll start to think about it. But not necessarily if someone else said something.
Correct.
So I was like, I don't engage with this because I don't think it's beneficial.
Like, and they're fueling the hate that they are so opposed to.
Yes,
I mean, myself included, I have difficulty with the side I don't agree with, but you're right in that I want them to see more clearly, but my hate is only making their noise louder.
Yeah. Right. So I have a friend who is in, you know, obviously we're being super vague. We don't want to like talk about, but I have another friend who I understand why he has that opinion. He comes culturally from that place and family members have been killed and, you know, like the whole thing. And I totally understand. And we had this discussion that ended up turning into kind of a fight because I wasn't in agreement with what he said about me. And he was coming from a triggered place. And I said, you know, I never, ever expect you to have a different opinion. Based on your lived experience, I don't expect you to have a different opinion. Based on your family and the systems that they've had to do to protect themselves and how they've had to believe for however long, like, I understand why you feel this way, but I am entitled to my own opinion, and I'm entitled to this discussion, or like us having this discussion in a polite manner. And I value your friendship and you as a person enough to say, you know what, this is not something we need to talk about you anymore. At least, like, we have talked about our viewpoints. We've talked about why I've said this is why, blah, blah, blah. And you've heard me out. You haven't changed your mind. I haven't changed my mind. So does that mean we can't be friends anymore?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Like, I highly disagree with you, but you're someone who's valuable to me and I still want to extend love to. Whereas like a few years back, like when Black Lives Matter, I lost a lot of friends because they didn't have the same viewpoint as me, as someone who's a person of color. And I was like, you know, I don't really want to have people in my life who don't care about me. Care about the things that I care about. And while I stood there in that viewpoint then, and I was very engaged, very inundated, very like, this is what's right and what's, you know, whatever, nothing changed. Like, the polarity got worse.
Exactly.
And like, and I'm not saying that like activism and things don't work. I'm not saying that at all. There are places and ways to do that where it is definitely appropriate. But between my interpersonal friendships, like, there are definitely times where, like, well, it depends on what they say. People say certain things where I'm like, okay, well, we're not in alignment anymore frequency-wise. And what you bring to my life now is a lot of stress and a lot of hate and a lot of this. So, you know, we're just going to – that might be a natural parting of ways. But not because I hate you, but because I love you enough not to be in this position where we're in constant tension.
Yep.
So, like, that person that I mentioned earlier is not really a part of my life in a very active way anymore, because we have very divergent views on things, but it doesn't mean that I'm not sending them love or sending their family love. They just had a baby. I'm sending them flowers, like things like that. I can still be in the space of love and know that, like, if you're not serving me in this way, I don't have to hate you.
That's right.
You're right.
I just don't have to be around you all the time.
Wow. I'm well, Miss Lovely, I mean, do you not have the perfect last name? We love you.
It's my middle name.
Is it?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, well, we love you. You have really brought so much light. Can you just tell us quickly, beyond reading and ordering Meaningful Manifestation,
doing
and listening
it now
to Spiritual Shit, which is an amazing podcast,
how
can people find you? Can they book sessions? What's the best way?
You can find me everywhere at thelovelyalia.com. That's where I hang out on Instagram as well. I provide coaching and sessions, and we're starting a mystery school next year. I had mystery school before, and I found a better way to run it. So we're going to start that next year. That's going to be really fun. But yeah, you can find all my good stuff, even my book, on thelovelyalia.com.
Well, we wish you so much good fortune with this book and everything you're putting out into the world. You are clearly right on purpose, and we're so grateful.
100%. You nailed it.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you for joining us today, guys. Thank you for listening. And as always, I know you're enlightened by this episode, so share it, because your friends and family deserve to
be enlightened. Everyone needs to hear it
too. We will see you all next week with another episode. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.